Today is Tuesday, January 19th, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, all is set for the inauguration of Joe Biden as the 46th president.
As a security for the nation's most important ceremony, held every 4 years, the inauguration of a president.
Also ahead, a presidential handover tradition may be in peril.
But will Donald Trump leave a friendly letter for President-elect Biden? No answer to that question yet.
Plus, Cameroon investigates a child trafficking syndicate. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is in the U.S. Tomorrow, Democrat Joe Biden will be inaugurated as the 46th president of the United States in Washington, D.C. under an unprecedented security blanket. Americans are bracing for the worst, but hoping for unity, the theme of Biden's inauguration. Mike O'Sullivan reports.
Massive security for the nation's most important ceremony, held every 4 years, the inauguration of a president. With a military presence in Washington not seen since the Civil War, in the House of Representatives, outgoing President Donald Trump was impeached for a second time last week. Biden's inauguration theme, America United, a challenging goal. 25,000 National Guard troops have been called in, and additional police. Terrence Gaynor, a former chief of the Capitol Police, tells VOA the security situation is safe.
The planning for that has been going on for over a year, as it was when I ran some of those operations. And there'll be some 5,000 law enforcement officers from the United States to be brought in the counties to supplement the Secret Service, the FBI, and the Capitol Police. I am confident the inauguration of the next president of the United States will come off smoothly.
Safe and socially distanced, much of the celebration will be virtual, hosted by Tom Hanks, with entertainers that include Lady Gaga and Jennifer Lopez. Much of Washington will be closed, with flags representing the hundreds of thousands of people who usually come in person. There have been protests in state capitals, and extra security is expected in all 50. A recent poll says three-quarters of Americans fear violence in coming days. One woman says the tensions are worsened by politicians who are often unresponsive to the nation's needs.
And I think that people often get really disconnected from the communities they claim to represent. So I think it's broken.
Two friends, flight attendants who disagree politically, agree on one thing. Americans need to come together.
The right is going way, way over here to the right. The left is going way, way over here to
the
left.
And that's where I agree with her. I think the right's too right, and I think the left is too left.
Among Biden's challenges, a belligerent North Korea, recently parading new weaponry in this unverified video from North Korean state television. Domestic challenges include soaring COVID infections, high unemployment, and political divisions, says Maryland College professor Anwar Hook.
Important thing is we want to move forward.
And many hope unify the country. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
Washington, D.C. is being protected by National Guard troops, and there is heightened tension leading up to the inauguration. On Monday, there was a brief lockdown at the U.S. Capitol during preparations for President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration. AP's Ed Donahue reports.
Following the deadly riot at the Capitol, this terrorism investigation is hitting close to home. John Hudak is senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.
We're talking about online chatter. We're talking about the dark web. We're talking about efforts to commit violence against the United States and its institutions and to assassinate members of the government.
Hudak says there's no difference between supporters of President Trump and Al-Qaeda and ISIS.
They're domestic terrorists, and they are not going to hang up their guns and their ammo vests on January 20th.
More than 20,000 National Guard troops are being dispatched across the Capitol to bolster security. Ed Donahue, Washington.
Americans are not the only ones eagerly anticipating the inauguration of Joe Biden as president. The rest of the world waits also. I reached reporter Henry Ridgewell for the mood in the United Kingdom.
It's been followed massively here. It's top billing on the news every night when coronavirus isn't the headline, and just a lot of intrigue about what the inauguration is going to look like.
Washington has always enjoyed a special relationship with the U.S., but some are wondering if its train now exists. What are you hearing out of 10 Downing Street?
There is confidence in number 10 Downing Street that the special relationship between Britain and the US can be maintained or can be rebuilt after President Biden's inauguration. Britain is hosting a couple of big key events this year, which will put it on the map and bring world leaders here, whether they want to come or not, really. The G7 meeting is being held in June, and then the climate meeting, COP26, will be held in November. So two big occasions where world leaders will arrive in Britain. And despite differences on some attitudes towards political methods, but towards populism, there are big areas of common ground still between the United States and Britain. And Boris Johnson and his team believe that it is around those shared areas of concern that the special relationship with Joe Biden will be rebuilt, notably on climate change. So that meeting in November looks to be key, notably on free trade, on how to deal with China and its trading practices, its global ambitions as well.
Talking about trade, how will post-Brexit impact on the relationship between the US and the UK?
Joe Biden has been very explicit in his opposition to Brexit and his willingness at the time in 2016 when the referendum was held for Britain to stay. So that opposition really has continued. And Joe Biden warned in November that the Brexit deal, that Britain's exit should not put the Good Friday Agreement that brought peace to Northern Ireland at risk. His pick for Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, has likened Brexit to a dog being run over by a car, a total mess, as he put it. So there is undoubtedly a difference of opinion on Brexit. And a key question to be asked in terms of what role will Britain play in the future now that it's outside of the European Union?
President Trump gave the impression that he had or enjoyed a special relationship with British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Do you think that President Biden and Johnson would be able to nurture and sustain such a special relationship, which could be invaluable when it comes to really tough issues?
Most indications are that traditional diplomacy will hold sway, that both sides see the relationship as more important than any possible personal animosity they might have. They are, after all, very close allies, both with seats on the UN Security Council, in the G7, and so on. Will it be as warm a relationship as between Johnson and Trump? It's difficult to say, because for several months, I think Boris Johnson has tried to hold Donald Trump at arm's length, knowing that possible close relationship could spell trouble. There is history, though, as well. Of course, Joe Biden was vice president under Barack Obama, and at the time, Boris Johnson said that Barack Obama had what he called an ancestral dislike of Britain because of his Kenyan roots and the history of the British Empire. And that, we know, didn't go down well in Washington with Barack Obama and Joe Biden. So there is some historical issues to overcome as well. But nobody, I think, is expecting any of those personal issues, any of those historical issues, really to bubble into any problems with the relationship between Johnson and Biden. It won't necessarily be a hugely warm relationship. Perhaps Joe Biden will develop a stronger relationship with, for example, Angela Merkel or Emmanuel Macron.
That's journalist Henry Ridwell. I spoke with him from London. Outgoing presidents usually leave warm handwritten notes for incoming presidents in a tradition that began with Ronald Reagan in 1989. AP correspondent Rita Foley reports that tradition is in peril this year as President Donald Trump leaves the White House.
It started in 1989. Outgoing President Reagan left a kind handwritten note in the Oval Office for incoming President George H.W. Bush. It featured a cartoon that read, "Don't let the turkeys get you down." Reagan said he would be praying for Bush. Bush left a note for Bill Clinton, too. "Your success now is our country's success. I am rooting hard for you." And so it was that departing presidents began leaving warm handwritten notes for their successors in the Oval Office. But will Donald Trump leave a friendly letter for President-elect Biden? No answer to that question yet, though President Trump is refusing to attend Biden's inauguration. I'm Rita Foley.
President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris took breaks from their inauguration preparations for service events in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. AP correspondent Jennifer King has more.
In Philadelphia, the Bidens and members of their family joined an assembly line filling boxes with non-perishables and fresh fruit for the charity Philabundance. Kamala Harris resigns her Senate seat.
We've got a lot of work to do. It's not going to be easy.
Harris and her husband filled bags with produce and dry goods at Martha's Table, a food bank in Southeast Washington.
In honor of the Day of Service, where we recognize and pay tribute to the work of Dr. King.
Jennifer King, Washington.
Confirmation hearings start today for key members of Joe Biden's cabinet, but it's doubtful any will be confirmed in time for Wednesday's inauguration. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
National Security Cabinet will likely be bare on the first day of Joe Biden's presidency. Although confirmation hearings are being held today in Senate committees for the nominees to head the State Department, Homeland Security, the intelligence community, and the Pentagon, none is likely to be approved when Joe Biden takes his oath of office. Generally, the defense secretary is sworn in on inauguration day, but political tensions have caused delays. And nominee Lloyd Austin recently retired from the Army needs a waiver. Treasury Secretary nominee Janet Yellen's also testifying. In prepared remarks, she's urging Congress to do more to offset the fiscal ravages of the pandemic. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
On day one of his new administration, President-elect Joe Biden plans to unveil an immigration bill providing a path to citizenship for an estimated 11 million people living in the U.S. without legal status. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
This is a massive reversal from the Trump administration's harsh immigration policies and would fulfill a major campaign promise of Biden's. As a candidate, he called Trump's actions on immigration an unrelenting assault on American values and said he would undo the damage while continuing to maintain border enforcement.
This is the Voice of America. A panel of experts commissioned by the World Health Organization has criticized China and other countries for not moving to stem the initial outbreak of the coronavirus earlier and questioned whether the UN Health Agency should have labeled it a pandemic sooner. In a report issued Monday, the panel led by former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and former New Zealand Prime Minister Helen Clark said there were, quote, lost opportunities to apply basic public health measures at the earliest opportunity, unquote, and that Chinese authorities could have applied their efforts more forcefully in January, shortly after the coronavirus began sickening clusters of people. A humanitarian organization says nearly 10 million children in war-ravaged Afghanistan are at risk of not having enough food to eat in 2021 and is calling for billions in new funds for aid. Just over 18 million Afghans, including 9.7 million children, are badly in need of life-saving support, including food. That's according to London-based Save the Children. The aid group is calling for $3 billion in donations to pay for assistance in 2021. Chris Inyamandi, Afghan country director for Save the Children, says Afghans are suffering under a combination of violent conflict, poverty, and the coronavirus pandemic. You're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Cameroon police say they have opened investigations into a network of traffickers who allegedly buy babies from the Central African state to sell in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Moki Edwin Kinzeke reports from Yaoundé.
Baldwin Gweha, senior official of the Gendarmerie post at Mimbouman, a Yaoundé neighborhood, says he arrested 41-year-old Pierre Esola for carrying out an activity that violates human dignity.
C'est en ligne, il n'y a pas de bureau. Ce sont ces filles qui nous contactent en ligne que elles ne peuvent pas.
Esola tells Cameroon police that all negotiations with potential buyers and sellers of babies are by telephone.
J'ai été contacté par une femme du Congo.
He says he found a Congolese woman on social media who was offering to help teenage and single mothers to take care of their newborn babies. He says he immediately contacted the Congolese woman through WhatsApp and told her that many young girls with unwanted pregnancies in Cameroon need help. He says he recorded and sent videos of poor teenage mothers to the woman in Congo. He says while in Cameroon, the woman disclosed to him that she had another partner who helps her to buy babies from the coastal Cameroonian city of Douala. Esola said his intention is to help poor mothers, especially teenagers, who abandon their babies on the streets because there is no one to help take care of the babies.
That's reporter Moki Edwin Kinzeke in Yaounde. Western leaders have demanded the release of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny, who was arrested Sunday on arrival in Moscow after receiving medical treatment in Germany. Here is Henry Ridgewell again to report.
Less than 24 hours after his return to Russia, opposition leader Alexei Navalny was given a highly unusual judicial hearing inside this Moscow police station Monday and put in pre-trial detention for 30 days. Prosecutors want an existing 3.5-year suspended sentence for embezzlement converted into a full jail term. Navalny says the charges are politically motivated and called on his supporters to take to the streets.
Не молчите, сопротивляйтесь, выходите на улицы.
Don't be silent, resist, take to the streets. Nobody will protect us but ourselves. And we are so many that if we want to achieve something, we will achieve it.
Navalny was arrested Sunday after returning from Germany, where he had been receiving treatment following his poisoning in Siberia last year by a nerve agent. The Kremlin denies involvement in that attack. Berlin demanded Navalny's release.
The Russian authorities have arrested the victim of an attempted assassination with a chemical weapon, not the perpetrator. The German government strongly calls on the Russian government to first of all release Mr. Navalny immediately and secondly to fully investigate the circumstances of the chemical weapons attack on Russian soil.
Other European leaders echoed that demand, while the United Nations Human Rights Office said it was deeply troubled by Navalny's arrest. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and President-elect Joe Biden's incoming national security advisor have also called for his release. The 44-year-old leader of the Russia of the Future Party presents a challenge to President Vladimir Putin, says analyst Ben Noble.
With the State Duma elections coming up in 2021. Not only is Navalny a visible demonstration of opposition to the Kremlin, his anti-corruption foundation and its production of very slick YouTube videos with evidence of corruption of state officials and other members of the economic elite in Russia are an embarrassment for the Kremlin. It's certainly a danger for the Kremlin that Navalny turns into a martyr or his status as a martyr is consolidated.
Western nations have so far stopped short of punitive action. The EU last month joined allies in adopting a so-called Magnitsky Act, which allows for sanctions on individuals accused of human rights abuses. Financier Bill Browder, who was instrumental in pushing the legislation, says it's time the laws were put into action.
If you include all the countries of the EU, the US, Canada, the UK, etc., there are 31 countries. And so that will have a very significant effect on Russia, on the people who are sanctioned. And as I understand it, Navalny and his team, before they got on the plane, have constructed some type of list of who they think should be on this sanctions list.
Putin sees that outcome as the lesser risk, argues Noble.
The logic, I imagine, in the Kremlin will be that they can deal with that short-term turbulence, but getting him, this is an expectation, getting him in prison would be a way of depriving him of that media exposure.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov Monday dismissed criticism of Navalny's arrest. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Australia has said it could keep its external borders closed for the rest of 2021 because of the coronavirus. 28,721 coronavirus cases have been reported in Australia since the pandemic began. 909 people have died, according to the health department. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia closed its international borders to foreign travellers in March.
It's been a key part of the nation's COVID-19 strategy, along with mass testing, sophisticated contact tracing, and strict lockdowns. The cautious response to the pandemic has been mostly successful. There are estimated to be 203 active coronavirus cases in Australia, and airlines had hoped overseas travel would resume as early as July. But that's unlikely, according to the head of the health department, Professor Brendan Murphy. He was asked by the Australian Broadcasting Corporation if the nation's international border controls would be relaxed this year.
The answer is probably no. I think we'll go most of this year with still substantial border restrictions. Even, you know, if we have a lot of the population vaccinated, we don't know whether that will prevent transmission of the virus, and it's likely that quarantine will continue for some time. So I think at the moment we've got this light at the end of the tunnel, the vaccine, so we're going to go as safely and as fast as we can to get our population vaccinated, and then we'll look at what happens.
An inoculation campaign is set to begin in Australia next month. Citizens, permanent residents and some foreign nationals with exemptions are allowed to enter Australia if they complete a 14-day hotel quarantine at their own expense. However, there are strict quotas on the number of travellers allowed to return home because of capacity constraints within the hotel system and concerns about the spread of the highly contagious British strain of coronavirus. This month, authorities have granted entry to about 1,200 tennis players, staff and officials for the Australian Open. Under biosecurity guidelines, players are allowed to train at dedicated venues for a few hours each day. But several recent arrivals have tested positive to the virus, forcing dozens of players to be confined to their hotel rooms for 2 weeks. Australia created a so-called travel bubble with neighbouring New Zealand late last year, but it only operates one way, with inbound flights to Australia. The border closures have hit the tourism industry hard. In 2019, more than 9 million overseas tourists visited Australia. The education sector, once popular with Chinese and Indian students, has also been badly damaged by Australia's travel ban on most foreign nationals. Australians wanting to travel overseas must have government permission. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coronavirus deaths are rising in nearly two-thirds of American states as a winter surge pushes the overall toll towards 400,000 people amid warnings that a new, highly contagious variant is taking hold. As Americans observe the national holiday, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo pleaded with federal authorities to block travelers from countries where new variants are spreading. He cited new versions detected in Britain, South Africa, and Brazil. A vast effort is underway to get Americans vaccinated, but the campaign is off to an uneven start. According to the latest federal data, about 31 million doses of vaccines have been distributed, but fewer than 11 million people have received at least one dose. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next edition of Straight Talk Africa, guest host Vincent Macquarie examines the impact of a second wave of the coronavirus in Africa.
Tune
in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC.